rejected the contract by 94.6%.
We're more upset with the union than we are our company right now.
3 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning, Friday morning, Apple Cup Friday, coming a little early this year. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Hey, we're still festooned in our game day digs here, Apple Cup digs. There's Philip J with his, oh my goodness, wearing a tie with his crimson shirt. And of course, I'm bedecked in purple and should be.
I churched it up a little bit for Friday.
And it's actually going to be a really great game. Both teams undefeated. And both teams playing very impressive football.
I can tell you a little bit of what the strength and weaknesses of WSU. What's the strength and weakness of the Husky football team right now?
I think the Huskies have a great running game.
Okay, that's kind of where the Cougs are now. It's been a little flip-flop from all this air raid stuff.
Well, you've got a quarterback who can,
run
and catch.
Yeah, well, or throw.
He can run, can throw, he can scramble. All-purpose quarterback. Anyway, we need to talk to a specialist about this. So senior sports correspondent Matthew Carlson will be joining us at the bottom of the hour to talk about that. Well, let's talk about, speaking of things happening in the air, Boeing machinists are on strike. They make the best airplanes in the world most of the time. Anyway, Boeing.
As long as the door plug works.
Yes, Boeing machinists on strike as of this morning. Here's Como's Mary Nauman, Preston Phillips.
By a resounding total, Boeing machinists voted to strike effective at midnight, and this marks the first time in 16 years the machinists are now on the picket lines.
In the end, the vote to strike was almost unanimous, with 96% of machinists voting to walk off the job. This means 33,000 people are now on strike.
33,000 workers on strike, not only here in the Puget Sound area, but also Moses Lake, Portland, Oregon, Victorville, California, Edwards Air Force Base, Southern California, a lot of civilian Boeing employees down there. We'll get into the meat and potatoes of this. What I found unusual is that oftentimes, workers will vote to reject a contract, but they won't vote to strike. It's like, we're rejecting the contract, and you're on notice that if we don't get what we're looking for, we're ready to strike.
Now, we'll stay on the job for a little bit longer, negotiate a little bit longer, see where this goes.
Especially since their own union president, the guy you just heard, was recommending a yes vote just a few days ago. So it's not like Boeing was doing anything abusive to its workers to provoke a strike. Boeing bargained in good faith. They cut a deal with the union leadership, and the rank and file took one look at it and said, you got to be kidding me. No way. So what's caught my attention is that 94.5% of the machinists voted to reject the contract, but 96% voted to strike. They actually had more workers who wanted to strike than who voted for the contract. That's really unusual. And, you know, the spirit at Boeing is all for the strike here.
We're more upset with the union than we are our company right now.
So I'm guessing that if there is a casualty, if anyone loses their job over the strike, it's probably going to be the head of the machinists, John Holden. But that will come. That will come later. Boeing employees are already out on strike. They struck just after midnight. Picket lines are already being staffed. I would love to hear from KVI listeners who are existing Boeing employees, who are family members of Boeing employees, or who have been previous, you know, who are former Boeing employees, because the real benefit, the real beauty of talk radio is talking to people who are seeing reality right where it's happening. Reality on the ground in real time. So if you want to contribute your opinion, you can join me on the air if you'd like. 206-421-5757. Again, Boeing employees, family members of Boeing employees, or former Boeing employees. And if you're a little bashful about going on the air, I get that. Go ahead and text me and help educate the listeners about why the company was so ready to strike on this. You can, again, text at the same number, 206-421-5757. 5757. We know what the union officials are saying. We know what Boeing Corporate is saying. But I want to hear from workers, family members of workers, who can tell us what's happening right there on the floor. Do I think it's going to be a long strike? Yeah, I think it might be. The longest strike Boeing ever had was in 1948. Boeing workers stayed out for 140 days. I don't think that's going to happen, but, you know, it could. A lot of machinists say that they're ready to stay out until Thanksgiving, at which point Boeing may simply let the workers stay out until the new year because they always close the plants over the Christmas break. One of the things that has upset some of the Boeing workers is that Boeing said it's a four-year deal. It got 25% raise over 4 years. And the machinists are saying, well, wait a minute now. You're giving us 25% over 4 years, but we're losing our annual bonus. Well, the annual bonus, those are famous, the Christmas bonuses for Boeing employees. It amounts to about 4% of their annual wages. So they have their wages, and then they get a big bonus at the Christmas holidays. And those bonuses would apparently have gone away. Anyway, phones are ringing on the John Carlson Show. We're going to go to Don. Don Creech, good to hear your voice there on the John Carlson Show.
Good morning, John. I'm really calling about the subject you were talking about yesterday, which was one of the requests of this contract negotiation is that Boeing terminate the 401k plan and reinstate the defined benefit pension plan.
Yeah.
This has to be because of younger generation coming in, the older generation, the boomers who were in the process of retiring, if back in the 80s wanted a 401k plan. What attracted them to that was pension plans were overfunded, which means they had more money in the till than was required to meet current pension benefits.
Right.
And employees look at that, and it wasn't just Boeing, it was across the board with major firms, looked at that and said, well, if we had a 401k plan, that excess money would be in our account and we would control it. So personal benefit motivating employees, there was a move to increase 401k plans, or actually initiate 401k plans. And Congress looked at it and said, there's a bunch of excess money that those pension plans don't need. The companies are using pension plans to avoid paying taxes. So Congress, I believe it was the 86 Tax Act, basically forced disgorgement of that excess funding. Neither the employees nor Congress considered that pension plans are actually acting as insurance companies.
Right.
Nobody thinks that an insurance company with excess reserves is mishandling money because they know there are unexpected claims coming downstream.
Sure. They have got to keep that money. They got to keep that money in trust.
They do. And the problem with the pension plans is that at that time, the returns had been adequate to exceed the expected payout. But those reserves are in anticipation of bear market,
right,
where they don't make enough to meet the payout requirements. That was an issue that Congress basically ignored.
Mm-hmm.
And it's come back to haunt the companies and the government agencies that still have pension plans in place. After a period of phenomenal returns in the market,
right,
ending in the 90s with the tech bubble,
mm-hmm,
I believe it was the San Jose Police Pension Fund that reduced retirement age and increased benefit to 100% of final pay.
Wow.
On the assumption that those returns of 20 years were a given. Well, they haven't made that since.
Right.
And they have become substantially underfunded. And you look at the state of Illinois with their
pension plan. Wait, stop there. Because this is all very, very interesting. But tell me what you would say to Boeing workers who say, we want to go, they actually want to replace their 401k program and go back to a defined benefit plan. What do you say to those workers? I've never heard of a company doing that.
And I don't think that they're likely to. What happened is the company will have to build excess reserves in that pension plan, and it's very likely that Congress will do once again what they've done before when they see excess funding and strip it out. force the companies to pay it out and basically put the pension plan back in to a marginal balance position. I mean, it is, and the other issue is that the last couple of decades have been hard with volatility in the market for 401k plans to achieve what employees believe is their fair return, which is a different issue of unreasonable expectations. But AI has changed the business world. We're in the beginning of a 20-year bull market.
Right.
So we look at the recent past and we get fearful. I don't know how to manage this. And they move this over to a pension plan. The company will build up the excess returns.
Okay.
Congress will be tempted to take it out because we are in massive deficit financing issues with the state.
It's amazing they're talking about surpluses here when states are going to have trouble making their defined benefit pension payments. Some states like Illinois just almost upside down. And, of course,
they are.
Look at our federal government. Speaking of deficits
and
debts.
We are underfunded on Social Security obligations, on Medicare obligations. I mean, this from a rational standpoint, employees would be better off retaining control of their own retirement and turning it back over into a pension plan where the government can come in and it's a big block of money.
Well, keep in mind also, not everyone who works at Boeing stays at Boeing. And if you've got a 401k, you could take it with you.
That's true. Yeah, the vesting issue and the residual retirement benefits for those people who did not stay in the older plan was substantially smaller than they would have had if had they maintained their own control.
Don, great, great thoughts and great perspective. And by the way, some great history, too. It's good hearing your voice again here on Talk Radio 570 KV.
Thanks, John. Have a great day.
You good. Have a good weekend here. It is Apple Cup weekend. The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Quick announcement. I don't do a lot of public appearances, but I'm doing one on Monday at the Puyallup Fair, the Washington State Fair at the Puyallup Fairgrounds. I would love to see you at the KVI booth. I'll be out there noon to 2 on Monday. And you know what? If you're a veteran or you're active duty military, and when I say veteran, that's everything. Reserve, National Guard, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, Space Force. If you are active duty or you're a veteran, would love to see you on Monday. It's free admission for you and your family. So all you got to do is show your military ID at the gate. Everybody comes in. How does that sound? That's Monday, the Puyallup Fair. The Washington State Fair and the Puyallup Fairgrounds. I will be at the KVI booth from noon to 2. Philip J. Vandervoort III is going to be there as well. Ari Hoffman is going to be out there in the afternoon as well. So it's going to be a fun time. And if you can't wait until Monday to see a KVI employee, Young Zach. Is this your first public appearance?
No, one this week.
First as a KVI personality.
I suppose, yeah. So today from 4 to 5 during the Ari Hoffman show, I will be with the KVI van, KVI sticker stop, we're calling it. We're going to start a whole run of these coming up here in the fall. So this is our first one. We're going to just be out handing out a whole bunch of fun KVI stuff before the election. So come by, grab a yard sign sticker and the other swag we got from 4 to 5. That's at the McClendon Hardware parking lot in Tacoma off North Pearl Street. So come on out and say hello.
4 to 5 p.m. this afternoon, McClendon's Hardware with Young Zach in Tacoma. All right. Very good. It is coming up here 20 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning. Philip J. around the corner of the social media suite. All right, Frankie Valli, pipe down here because Philip J. Vandervoort III is ready for the social media sweep this morning. What's going on in Twittersville, sir?
I'm going to be rolling heavy through the Puget Sound area here, the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Sometimes you think maybe somebody's social media account got hacked because what they post is so ludicrous. But the Associated Press, and I've been hammering on the Associated Press here the last month or so, mostly because they've deserved it. But anyhow, they posted, a story with a headline that says, "Ever wanted to quit Elon Musk's X platform? Here's how you can do it." And they posted this story on Twitter, on X. So, right, it just seems too incredible to believe. And then everybody in the thread is, I don't believe you that it works. Can you try it with your first account? Or with your account first, rather. And then somebody else writes, nah, you quit first. Lead by example. And then...
Well, they had that coming to them.
Yeah, exactly. And then somebody adds another response. How can we quit your BS? Is there an article for that? And then here's
the,
probably...
The Associated Press, which has a Twitter account, posts an article on how to quit Twitter, and they post that
on Twitter.
Their Twitter account as well.
And
boy.
Then somebody else posted a...
Talk about a lack of self-awareness.
A response. Ever wondered how to stop reading the Associated Press? I've written an article in the Associated Press about it. Go check it out. So, but I, like I said, it just invites its own... form of comedic
ridicule.
Responses. Yeah, perfect.
Ridicule
even
well
better.
Deserved.
Ridicule. Dave Reichert, running for governor on his social media handle, at Reichert4Gov, posted this. Bob Ferguson has a TV ad running stating a total lie that I want to cut teachers' pay. I've literally never said that in my life. I believe the opposite is what Reichert writes in response to this Ferguson campaign ad.
Here's what I...
I'll play you the ad.
Well, I don't want to play the ad.
Well, I've got it.
I know, but here's why I don't want to play the ad. No. I don't want to give them the publicity of giving them a free ad. But here's what I would say today to the Ferguson campaign. I think this is very fair. You say Dave Reichert said teachers are overpaid? Play the clip.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Show me. You say that when you criticize him on Donald Trump, you say, well, he says he's not for Trump, but he's kind of head faked that he does support Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And we've got that on tape. Okay. If Dave Reichert said teachers are overpaid, play the freaking tape.
Yeah. Source the material.
That
right?
he wants to reduce. That he wants to cut the education budget? Reichert said he is called for doing precisely the opposite. So, and he can show, he'll play the tape. Let's have the Ferguson campaign play the tape. And I think every TV station in Washington, because this is a huge media buy,
right?
They should stop, they should freeze the ad, pause the ad and say, we call on the Ferguson campaign to furnish proof that Dave Reichert said these things.
And Reichert added in this social media post, I've taken legal action to encourage TV stations airing this ad to take this libelous ad down.
Yeah.
They would have the latitude to do so, he adds, and he writes, let's hope those TV stations pull this ad because it's false, according to Reichert. So, and like you said, hey, offer up the proof, Bob Ferguson, if you can. Pete Serrano is running for attorney general in the state of Washington, and he is picking up on a story that you talked about at the beginning of the week. This was a car chase in Lacey that ended up in a fatal car crash in Olympia. And Serrano posted on social media, a grandmother of four grandkids died as a result of this wreck. And several others have multiple serious injuries in this wreck to a driver fleeing from police in a stolen vehicle, resulting in a head-on collision. According to the Cairo 7 story, the driver's arrest record was one of the longest they've ever seen, including fentanyl usage.
49 arrests.
47 arrests was what I recall. Tragic, preventable stories like this are happening more frequently, and it has to stop. When dangerous criminals are prematurely released, innocents suffer. And then he says, as AG, I pledge to work diligently with law enforcement to end these types of stories and cases.
Good, good.
So there's Pete Serrano.
All right. No, I'm glad that people are paying attention to this. Someone with a rap sheet like that should simply not be out walking around, let alone driving around looking for fentanyl. And one other thing, Phil, I believe there were active warrants for her in three cities in King County.
Issaquah, Renton, Seattle.
There you go. It's 6:30, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. So I mentioned the Apple Cup. Both teams are actually doing really well so far this year. We better check in with our senior sports correspondent, Matthew Carlson, about this. Right around the corner as the commute continues, Talk Radio 570 KVI. That's either Johnny Cash or someone trying to imitate Johnny Cash. That's the real deal. The commute with Carlson, 24 minutes to 7 o'clock.
I wonder how Dave Dudley's going to vote on I-2117 if he's a trucker. Think he'll vote yes and pay less?
Phil, I don't wonder at all. He'll keep trucking.
Now C.W. McCall's a toss-up.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot less money. How does has not endorsed. Zach remember C.W. McCall from the 1970s? He's convoy.
He's a man of unique depth.
For him, that's history. All right. Okay.
For this nation, that's history.
This is strange that, you know, we always preview the Apple Cup, and it's always during Thanksgiving week because the Apple Cup traditionally is played the Friday after Thanksgiving, and it's always the last game of the season for both teams, regular season game. And this year, of course, because the Huskies are in a different league, they still are facing off against each other, but it's their third game of season because then we have to get into league play for the rest or most of the rest. And both teams are off to a really great start. And who's going to win the Apple Cup? Well, better check in. Senior sports correspondent Matthew Carlson on the John Carlson Show. All right. Good morning, Matthew. How are you, sir?
Good morning and happy Apple Cup Eve.
Yes, that's another thing, the game being played on a Saturday rather than Friday. Okay, you've got
down here in Oregon, everybody getting ready for the, well, we can still call it Civil War, right? The Civil War. So the Oregon schools will be facing each other just right after the Washington schools do. So
I had forgotten that in Oregon, they have their own version of the Apple Cup. Between Oregon, Oregon State, they call it the Civil War. And in the last few years, the woke crowd said, you shouldn't really call it the Civil War. People might be confused. I don't think people are confused.
Because we were definitely the first ones to fight a civil war. Yes. But that'll also be happening. But yeah, Apple Cup Eve, the 116th Apple Cup. Between Wazoo and UW, it should be a great game.
Washington State. Yes, there we go. For all you Cougar fans
Tom Tuttle
out there. And let's see, Matthew, who's won most of those Apple Cups? All right.
Sounds like the media guys are on it. Not Washington State has not been their game. Thus far, they did snag one back in 2021, but
I remember that one.
Since then, it's been all UW and all UW for quite the last few years before that too. 12:30 kickoff at Lumen Field,
and where the Seahawks play.
At Lumen Field has hosted the Apple Cup before, as recently as 2011. I don't have to tell you who won that one. It wasn't the Cougs. UW rolled 38-21. And that was back when Husky Stadium was getting refurbished.
Rehabbed, yes.
But, yes, the school's able to come to an agreement to play the game for at least the next five seasons, but the Cougs do miss out on hosting a home Apple Cup, Washington insisting on splitting the gate here at Lumen Field. So it'll be interesting to see just a neutral environment, kind of a home environment for UW still being in Seattle.
Because even though it's being played in Seattle, there's going to be a huge boatload of Cougar fans at that game.
Oh, yes.
All right. So how are we looking for attendance?
There's still tickets available.
Okay.
You know, tickets, as you and I were looking, are not cheap.
Well, they're pricing them too high. They just started way too high. So, again, it's the Apple Cup. And will the game be on TV?
So, kind of. The game will be streamed on Peacock. So, is NBC's streaming affiliate.
Okay.
And folks will need to find an arena and an avenue that has that resource.
Head to your latest sports bar. Okay, your favorite sports bar, rather. All right.
Head to a sports bar. Hope they have it. Pay $7. Download it
We have just a few minutes. Let's talk about the game itself. I see a much more evenly matched game than the odds makers seem to see. I'm looking at the quarterback for Washington State, John Mateer, and I'm thinking this guy's got superstar written all over him.
John Mateer knows how to steer the bus, that's for sure. He's led the Cougs to back-to-back impressive victories, first against Portland State and then against Texas Tech in the home opener last week. Ran for 197 yards last week, too, which is crazy.
Yeah, show me a quarterback who runs for nearly 200 yards in a game.
Particularly for Washington State quarterbacks that typically throw the ball for hundreds and hundreds of yards a game. But, yes, so John Mateer versus Will Rogers
of
the University of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And you are correct. A close game is predicted. Washington is only favored by 4.5. But the Cougs are hungry for this one. There's a lot of feelings of resentment towards the University of Washington. Some of it, you're talking to a Coug, justified that they lose out on a home Apple Cup, have to come to Seattle to play this one. So it should be a great, well-spirited game, and still tickets available. Okay. And, 60,000 plus.
All right.
In crimson and purple.
Yeah. No, there's going to be, they got room for 67,000 people in that stadium. Speaking of Lumen Field, the Seahawks will not be at Lumen Field this Sunday because they're traveling to New England to take care of the Patriots.
They will be traveling to New England. Not sure if Marshawn Lynch will be traveling with the team to give the coach a massage on the sideline like he did last week. But it was an impressive win last week for the Seahawks.
Back massage, yes.
Back massage.
That was a fun scene.
Just be cool. Just calm down. Relax. And hopefully the Seahawks can do just that, and Mike McDonald can win his second game in the league. Youngest head coach in the league, by the way, at 37, Mike McDonald. So New England, of course, first time in 24 seasons, no Bill Belichick, no Tom Brady now for a few seasons, too. They are rebuilding. But get up and go get breakfast early or get it ready in front of the TV. It's a 10 a.m. kickoff in Foxborough, Massachusetts. Seahawks are favored by 3.5. But this New England team beat the Bengals last week. So both teams coming into this next contest 1-0.
All right. And last night, Seattle Mariners, ouch, they're up against the Texas Rangers. The Mariners need to win at least three of these four games if they have any chance whatsoever of making a playoff berth, either by winning the division where they fell another game behind, I think they're behind five now, or the wild card.
That one hurt. That was a hit to that was absolutely, if you compare this to boxing, that was a hard knockdown and laying on the floor for a second. The Mariners are now 4.5 games out of the division lead in the West and 4.5 games out of the wild card behind Boston, Detroit, and the Minnesota Twins for that last wild card spot.
And we only have like 20 games left.
Even less. Just a few series left. Games in the teens, and they do have three in Houston, so that is an opportunity to make up to three games, but they really need to be in a position where they're, three, 2.5, two games out by the time they get there in order to have a real chance to close that gap.
Well, last night they had, three-run, four-run lead, and they just gave it away.
That's a tough one.
Ouch. All right, Matthew Kerr. Go ahead.
Pac-12 is alive and well with four more teams coming into it. So the two-pack is now the six-pack and working its way towards more.
Yes, the Pac-12 became the Pac-2. It will now, with, I think, San Diego State and Colorado State, Boise State.
A lot of state schools. Fresno State, Colorado
Fresno,
State.
Fresno, that's where Kalen DeBoer came from. These are all Kalen good DeBoer. Teams with good programs, and they're rebuilding the Pac-12 conference. Again, it'll be the Pac-6, but then room for maybe Stanford and Berkeley to come back?
Possibly. They're out doing their thing in the ACC. Be nice to get Hawaii, too. That'd be a fun for Coug fans, home and away every couple years, going to Hawaii. So lot of interesting things happening there, and a wonderful weekend of sports and football to come.
All right. Very good, Matthew. Thanks very much. Great, as always, preview of what's in front of us here. The Apple Cup tomorrow, 12:30. Tickets still available. We'll be streaming on Peacock, the NBC streaming service. It is 6:47 in the morning. Thanks again, Matthew.
You got it, Dad. I'll bet you a cigar on the game. Love you very much, we'll talk soon.
All right. Likewise, son. We got our good buddy Lars Larson, our noon to three host, right around the corner on the Commute with Carlson. Back we are, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Here's my good buddy Lars Larson, our noon to three host here.
Happy First Amendment Friday, John.
Absolutely. How many years have you been doing First Amendment Friday?
Let's see. It would be 20, as of this year, 27 years.
It's been a little while.
It's been a while.
You're getting the hang of it, too.
I'm trying. if you practice anything enough, you eventually figure out an acceptable... Well, I might hold back because Kamala Harris has been doing politics for decades, and so has Tim Walz. And
they're not getting the hang of it.
They're not getting. In fact, I did have to enjoy it last night when Tim Walz made the Freudian slip of Freudian slips because he said it's an amazing story how she got her start. That Kamala Harris, and I kid you not, he said, began as a young prostitute. And I'm not kidding. It's on tape. And I thought that is the because for your audience who don't know. Kamala Harris got her first two positions, and I do the double entendre there, in politics by being appointed to them by Willie Brown, very powerful California politician who she was sleeping with, even though he was married. So there you go.
I wanted to draw your attention to something else that got my attention. Dick Blumenthal,
yeah.
A very partisan liberal Democrat, was in a committee hearing. It was a off-the-record, closed-door meeting about the investigation, ongoing investigation into the attempt on Donald Trump's life.
Yep.
He walked out of the hearing and said, I think the American people are going to be shocked, astonished, and appalled by what we will report to them about the failures by the Secret Service in this assassination attempt on the former president.
And he added Homeland Security in that as well. Right. Apparently they're implicated too. And this Blumenthal's a hardcore left-wing Democrat. I don't have much respect for him. He said some things over the years that I just don't respect. But I was stunned because this is suggesting because the administration runs the executive branch. That means he's coming out saying that this is going to be a failure of a Joe Biden agency. And I'm wondering what he's going to tell us that we haven't heard already about the failures of the Secret Service.
He says that the American people will learn things that would shock them about the, quote, lapses and lags in the protection that was afforded that day and the breakdown in communication. So something new is coming our way on what went wrong that awful, near tragic day in Butler, Pennsylvania. You don't want to miss Lars every day of the work week from noon till 3. Have a good one, buddy.
Thank you.
It's coming up on 7 o'clock, hour number 2 of The Commute right in front of us. 'Tis 3 minutes after 7 o'clock, hour number 2 of The John Carlson Show Friday edition of the radio program of record, Lucky Friday the 13th. And I hope you have a great weekend in front of you. A lot of football fans going to be paying attention to the Apple Cup.
Yes!
Which we talked about just a few minutes ago with our senior sports correspondent, Matthew Carlson. I have gone on a diet recently that I wanted to spend a few minutes talking to you about. Because during COVID, I have a theory. When things were locked down and shut down, either you got into the best shape of your life because more time at home and, you know, fewer hours at the office, or you got in bad shape because you got thrown off your rhythm, thrown off your regular regimen and routine. I'm in the second category. You all know how active, physically active I am, you know, climbing mountains for charity and all this other stuff, and still in a reasonably good shape, but I just started gaining weight. And I have done weight loss before. Weight loss with workout regimens like Body for Life. That's where you do 6 workouts a week and also have a more disciplined diet. And that worked really well, but I don't have time. I have 2 jobs now. I have a job here, and then I'm VP for Government Affairs over at Kemper Development in the afternoon. And so I don't have time for 6 workouts a week. And then I did Body for Life, and Body for Life worked also very well. They give you the food to eat, and it is a very, you know, it's an expensive program. And so when I started weighing more than I've ever weighed before, my son told me that his boss was on this diet called fast metabolism, the fast metabolism diet. And I said, okay, sounds gimmicky to me. How's it work? And he bought me as a present the book. And so you don't have to pay, you know, thousands of dollars for this program, and you don't have to buy someone else's food or milkshakes or whatever. They just have the recipes in the book. And here basically is how it works. It tries to re-engineer your metabolism so you metabolize your food, process your food much quicker, and you lose pounds that have accumulated because of, you know, just steady intakes of food that is not good for you. So here's one thing I told Matthew. I said, you know, I'll look at the book, but I don't do diets where you have to go hungry. It just doesn't work for me. And besides, I get very grouchy when I'm hungry. He says, no, my boss was on this diet. That doesn't happen. You can eat almost as much food as you want. So I went on the diet, and sure enough, you can eat delicious food and a healthy food. But here's the trade-off. You can't have any food with refined sugar. So say goodbye to donuts, say goodbye to candy, say goodbye to a lot of traditional snack food. You cannot have dairy. So say goodbye to cheese and say goodbye to butter. Say goodbye to, you know, lattes, you know, ice cream, et cetera, et cetera. So you can't have anything with refined sugar. You can't have dairy. You can't have soy. Okay. You can't have wheat. What's that? No bread? And you're not supposed to have alcohol or caffeine. And everyone, I get up at 3:30 in the morning.
What's caffeine have to do with it?
So anyway, and again, you can't have sugar, so you can't have those substitute boosters because they're loaded with sugar. So I said, you know what? The trade-off is if I do without this stuff, I can eat as much food as I want. You know, for instance, this morning, oatmeal with almond milk loaded with berries. And instead of sugar, you can use stevia, which is a sugar substitute that is not made from sugar or chemicals. So I go with that. Anyway, here's the deal. It's a 28-day diet. Today, I am on day 26. In 26 days, I have lost 17 pounds. So there's something about this diet that works. Again, you don't go hungry. You can eat a lot of food. Last night, I had sirloin steak. But I will also admit I've been eating more broccoli, beans, and asparagus than I've ever eaten in my life. Spinach. Lots of spinach. Anyway, if you want to check it out, because I want KVI listeners to be healthy and happy, and I want you to be around for a longer, it's called FastMetabolismDiet.com. Again, that's FastMetabolismDiet.com. We're going to try and have the leader behind the Fast Metabolism Diet on the program with us in the near future. But I wanted to go through the diet before and see how it worked before I would bring her on. And you'll notice I waited until the last few days of the diet before I told you about it, because I want to make sure it was for real and that it's possible to stay on this diet. It is. It is. It's a 28-day diet. And hopefully afterwards, if you don't stay on it, you know, to the precise specifications, you'll at least stay with most of it. So just, again, it worked for me. See if it'll work for you online, fastmetabolismdiet.com. Did the whole diet with nothing more than one book. So it's unlike, you know, some of these programs where you have to subscribe to the program and maybe eat their food and all this other stuff. You don't have to do that. Just a different way of eating. Okay, you got 11 minutes. 7-Eleven, a store I really can't go into if I'm on this diet, on the commute with Carlson this morning. What I talked to you about yesterday on the show, the aftermath of the Donald Trump-Kamala Harris debate, appears to be gathering steam. Everyone was talking about how Kamala Harris overperformed expectations. Donald Trump underperformed. She won the debate. Big momentum. She really, you know, touched, connected with the American people, et cetera, et cetera. And it turns out that that's not really happening. Swing voters in seven swing states will decide this election. Swing voters in about seven swing states. You already know them. North Carolina, Georgia, Arizona, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, et cetera, et cetera. So what is interesting is that those swing voters, for the most part, don't care about all the things that people were talking about when they were discussing who won the debate and how well she did and how poorly he did. They don't care about it. They don't care about her calling Donald Trump a felon. They don't care about the criminal charges. They don't care about things like that. They don't care that she baited him into talking about things that, you know, like the crowds at his rallies, and that's not what they tuned into the debate to hear. They don't care about, if you will, who was more comfortable on stage. They don't really care that the anchors were unfair. What they cared about, we talked about this yesterday, is who is going to fix the problems that messed up this country. They are first and foremost focused on the rising cost of living. And we told you yesterday that Reuters interviewed 10 of these swing voters before and after the event. Six of them said that based on what they heard him say, and more importantly, what they heard her say, and even more important than that, what she didn't say, six of them said that they were now leaning toward Trump. Three of them said they were leaning toward Harris. One was still undecided. The New York Times did the same thing. They interviewed eight undecided swing voters, found that two of them were now leaning toward Trump, one toward Harris, the rest just confused. When the BBC and the Wall Street Journal and CNN interviewed uncommitted swing voters, they were getting the same mixed results. How come? It is because while a lot of political insiders talked about how deftly Kamala Harris handled questions about changing her positions on the issues, these swing voters simply saw evasiveness. They said, you know, if she changes her position, fine. How come? She went out of her way not to say why she changed. But we all know the reason. She just needs to get past this election. Most of the criticism, though, was that she never explained how she would be different from Biden. What is she going to do to improve the economy, bring down prices? A 34-year-old black woman in Milwaukee told the New York Times that watching the debate actually nudged her toward Donald Trump. She said, when Trump was in office, not gonna lie, I was living way better. I've never been so down as in the last 4 years. And, you know, what about Donald Trump being a bull in a china shop and being all wrapped up in himself and allegedly, committing crimes, et cetera, et cetera? And one of the people, Pennsylvania woman, told CNN, we're voting for the leader of our country, not who we want in our wedding party. Of the six people in the Reuters, the group of 10 undecided voters that Reuters interviewed before and after the debate, all six that said that they are going to now lean toward supporting Trump said they didn't like him as a person. They don't particularly care for him, but their personal financial situation had been better when he was president. So we're seeing something fascinating right now in this country, which is that while the media, and by the way, I was part of that. You know, I looked at the debate and remember I came in the next day and said, oh, man, lost opportunity. He could have put this election away. And I think I was right. He could have put the election away if he pressed her on her radicalism and he pressed her on she's just a continuation of Joe Biden and that he was the candidate of change. But by and large, everything else that was going on that got Good Morning America and the cast of The View and CNN pundits and even Fox News correspondents and commentators focused on the performance of them as in debating, is that's not what is moving the voters who will decide this election. None of those things are what matter. What matters to these people, who is going to fix a country that appears broken? We know what policies Donald Trump, this is his big advantage. We know what Donald Trump will do because he did those things and we were living better. So if she can do better than Trump, just tell us how. And calling him a disgrace and calling him a convicted felon, that ain't doing it. It's not working. So again, at the end of the week, as you know, the dust has settled after the debate, it looks like Donald Trump actually took a step toward re-election with the voters that will most decide this election. Wow. It's 21 minutes after 7 o'clock. Philip J. Vandervoort III right around the corner with a social media sweep. Steve Moore, who you see all the time on Fox News, going to join us at 7:35. All right, 25 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning. So, Philip J. Vandervoort III, what does this Taylor Swift song have to do with your social media sweep?
Oh, the Babylon Bee has put together a fantastic headline based on Taylor Swift's decision to make a political presidential campaign endorsement. The social media sweep, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Babylon Bee's headline says, "Woman who made career singing about her bad choices endorses Kamala Harris for president."
That's a good one. Well,
for more fake news, 4:45 every Friday, Fake News Friday with Young Zach here on KVI.
And that's Zach on the Ari Hoffman show in the afternoon.
One-line singers. Yeah. Nope. Singer who made her career singing about her bad choices endorses Kamala Harris. Oh, that's good.
Yep. Okay. Political world. Campaign for governor here in the state of Washington. Bob Ferguson posted a clip of his debate performance on the King 5 debate earlier this week against Dave Reichert. Mm-hmm. And Ferguson posted, "I know who I am. I know who I'm fighting for." And then : each and every one of you. So he's fighting for Washington residents. And that's important. But here's something else that Ferguson said in the debate that really made me wonder about how sincere his effort is, or at least the results of the effort he says he's giving. This is the moderator asking a question about safer schools, preventing school shootings. And then listen to Bob Ferguson's answer about what it takes to prevent school shooting.
According to the CDC, firearms have now overtaken car crashes as the leading cause of death for children 18 and younger. What can we do to reduce that number while still respecting the Second Amendment?
Yeah, I think one more thing I would add to my leadership on this issue now for many, many years on one of the more challenging issues facing our state, and not being afraid to lead on that in contrast to my opponent. But one thing I hear when I talk, to example, for teachers and educators all across our state who are worried about what's going on in the classroom, when I ask them what they see, what I hear is a response over and over is mental health issues, mental health issues, and mental health issues. They see a real need for more mental health counselors in the classrooms, in the schools, to help kids who are suffering from mental health issues.
Bob Ferguson repeats that three times. Mental health issues, mental health issues, mental health issues. My question then for Bob Ferguson would be, you've been in charge of this state as the top law enforcement official for, 12 years?
Where have you been?
Is it three terms?
All that time.
Governor
Inslee? With the state running healthy surpluses.
Yeah, the Governor Inslee administration has been in control for 12 years. Democrats have been in control of the legislature longer than that. Why are kids in such a horrible mental state with this leadership and the results of people like Bob Ferguson, the legislative Democrats, and Governor Jay Inslee? Can someone answer that for me, please?
Yeah. The answer is that those aren't his major concerns. He waited until his 10th year in office to get serious about any of these things. It's the same thing on crime, on organized retail theft, meaning shoplifting rings, sometimes rings coming from outside this country to raid stores along the I-5 corridor. He waited until his 11th year in office to set up a task force, which has resulted in a grand total of 2 shoplifting arrests. So the thing is, Bob Ferguson, when he brings these things up, and this is what Dave Reichert should seize on, he should be asking the same thing that Donald Trump needs to be asking every day of Kamala Harris, and that Trump brought up at the end of the debate. Where have you been? These are serious problems.
Yeah.
Where have you been for 12 freaking years? Yeah. Where have you been?
If Bob Ferguson thinks that the mental health of young people in the state is so bad, how did it get so bad under the control of Democrats politically and socially in this state? So I'd love to have him answer that question.
Very good. All right. Does that cap off?
That's the do social it. Let's media do it. I want to hear what Steve Moore has to say.
Good. Steve Moore, who is, of course, our chief economist here on the John Carlson Show. You see all the time on Fox News, joining us in just a few minutes from now.
Turd Ferguson.
25 minutes to 8 o'clock. Hey, I know how you can get your weekend off to a great start. How would you like to pay dramatically less for a gallon of gasoline, fill up your car, right now. Because our good friend Brian Haywood, Let's Go Washington, the guy behind Initiative 2117 and three other great initiatives that will bring down the price of gasoline by repealing the Climate Commitment Act, joins us on the John Carlson Show this morning. Hello, Brian. What's going on?
Good morning, John. Well, we've got an event out in Sammamish today on Inglewood Hill Road. We'll be at the Shell gas station on Inglewood Hill Road at 8 o'clock this morning. Where we'll be rolling back the price of gas to the national average. That's generally 80 to 100 cents off of what it's getting paid right now in Washington.
That's 80.
And anybody can come.
That's 80 cents to a dollar under the state average here in Washington state.
Absolutely. You know, about 30 to 50 cents of that is going to be straight from the Climate Commitment Act. And we're just trying to draw attention and let everybody know that if you vote yes in November, you pay less.
Great way of dramatizing that, Brian Haywood. Again, that is going to be at the Shell station in
Shell station, yeah, in Northeast Inglewood Hill Road in Sammamish.
There we go. Northeast Inglewood Hill Road in Sammamish, the Shell station. Go ahead. If you're anywhere in that vicinity, you may as well start your weekend off with a huge discount, the price of gasoline, courtesy of Brian Haywood, Let's Go Washington, and the campaign to pass Initiative 2117. This is great news. How's the campaign going, Brian?
Oh, it's really fantastic. We know that we've hit a sweet spot when they're whining and complaining and trying to file lawsuits over us doing these gas station events. It makes them mad because we're pointing out the difference in what they've cost people.
If people think that Initiative 2117 is about cutting the price of gasoline and sending a message to Olympia that people don't like being lied to, which is exactly what they did to get the Climate Commitment Act passed in the first place, then this thing wins no matter how much money they spend against it. Hey, I tell you what,
that's right.
While I have you here, I want to introduce you to a good friend of mine who needs to know you. That is Steve Moore, who you always see on Fox News, best-selling author. Steve Moore, I want you to meet the guy I've been telling you about, Brian Haywood, who is responsible for four initiatives on the November ballot. One of them will repeal Washington's capital gains tax. Another will repeal the Climate Commitment Act, which raised the price of gasoline nearly 50 cents a gallon here in Washington. A third would get rid of the long-term care mandate that Washington is the only state that requires you to be in this long-term care mandate program that nobody likes.
Right.
It makes the program optional.
Right.
And what is the fourth? Oh, the fourth one tells the government it has no right to ban natural gas, puts that choice in the consumer's hands. That's the guy who's on the phone with you right now. Those are the initiatives he helped make possible on the November ballot.
Well, Mike, you're my hero, and you're the modern-day version of Thomas Paine, so thanks for what you're doing. And I support wholeheartedly all of these initiatives. The green energy mandates are so expensive. They're a tax, and people think it's just kind of something that's free. No, those green energy mandates actually cost you as much as 50 cents a gallon at the gas tank. And you're way above the national average. I think the only state that's lower is California. John, you and I keep talking about whether Washington is higher or lower than California.
It's like a stock car race. They go back and forth.
I know. It really is. So I love it. Look, the capital gains tax is an income tax. I've been saying this for 30 years. One of the reasons that Washington state has been a prosperous state is because you're one of nine states that do not have an income tax, and God forbid that you should ever get rid of that. But the capital gains tax is just a foot in the door to tax income, and then you lose that advantage, John. Then I think Washington is through. I think they're going to be like California, and so I love.
Oh, did we lose?
I really pray that people vote for these things because they are would have an enormously positive impact.
You are absolutely right about the stakes. You're absolutely right about the stakes. I want to get a parting word from Brian here, because if these initiatives pass, Washington will be restored. Washington will be on a new pathway. If they fail, then Washington accelerates downhill toward California. So, Brian Haywood, thank you for giving Washington a chance to pull its chestnuts out of the fire, so to speak. And
well, and anyway, John, let me just say one quick thing in parting. You know, Brian, send me the information about every one of these initiatives. We'll put it out in our hotline that goes out to 100,000 influencers around the country. Everyone needs to know about this, what's happening in Washington. It's so damn exciting. One of the most important things in the ballots in any state. Then the next thing, you know, Brian, when you win these, I've got one more idea for you.
Oh, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to hear it. And I want to say, Stephen.
Here it is. You ready? The education dollars every single student in Washington State, regardless of their income or color of their skin or their ethnic background, every child, every family should be able to choose the best school for their kids.
Oh, bring the school.
What do you think, John?
Bring the school choice revolution to Washington.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, come on, this is happening. We're 25 states that have done this. It's the best. If you want to help low-income families, this is the single most important thing we could do as a country, as a state.
And frankly, if you want to help middle-class and upper-middle-class kids by giving them the leverage to leave public schools that aren't doing
that's
the job.
Right. And by the way, this would improve the public schools.
Yes.
Because competition is a good thing.
It is, unless you're afraid to compete.
Exactly.
All right. Brian Haywood, once again, if you want to pay the lowest prices in the state of Washington starting at 8 o'clock this morning, go to the Shell station in Sammamish, the Shell station on Northeast Inglewood Hill Road. And it's gasoline at, what is it, more like $3.30 a gallon, something like that?
It'll be right around the $3.30 somewhere.
Yeah, way under the...
Hey, John, I got to tell you something really quickly. I'm in Laredo, Texas today, right on the border and right in the oil patch. You know what we're paying for gasoline here? $2.49 a gallon.
Well, that's Texas. Oh, very good. Anyway, Brian, we'll continue to get the word out throughout the rest of the show.
Thanks, sir.
And again, thank you for all the great stuff that you are doing for the people of Washington State, these four initiatives. For more information, just go to letsgowashington.com. That's letsgowashington.com. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you. And thank you, Stephen. We'll get in touch with you.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, that man I just was talking to, Brian Haywood, is the most consequential political figure in the state of Washington. More consequential than the people running for governor, more consequential than either one of our U.S. senators. The person who is guiding and shaping the new future in Washington is Brian Haywood.
So in our hotline today, John, which you have not received yet this morning because it's just been sent out, we looked at the Census Bureau data from 2020 to 2023, so for the last 3 years. And guess what region of the country is blowing away the rest of the country?
In terms of economy?
The region, population growth and economy.
Oh, it's got to be Florida.
The South, yeah, the Southeast. Yeah. Florida, Tennessee, Texas,
the Carolinas,
Georgia, and they have the lowest taxes. You think that's a good... So they've gained 4 million people. The Northeast, the most liberal, high-tax area of the country, has lost about a million people in the last 3 years. Now, the Western states continue to gain population, but they're not California. California is not gaining population. My point is, you know, if you stay on that, you've got a choice to make in Washington State. Do you want to be like California, or do you want to be, a high growth state that you have been with low taxes, you know, on with no income tax? I worry about this, Sean. I worry that Washington is going to slip into the progressive era that has ruined the state of California, and it's already ruined Seattle.
Yeah, we have a lot of people in Washington State who have moved in recent years, and my response to all that is, hey, you stay where you're at. The people who are trying to turn Washington into California, let them move to California.
Yeah, exactly.
They're the ones who should move. If they want California, get on I-5. It's about 730 miles down the road.
California, if they stay on the same path they're on right now, they could lose another 3 or 4 congressional seats, which would be amazing because, you know, for the last 100 years, California keeps gaining and then gaining, you know, congressional seats. And it shows why policy matters, because let's face it, there's no more beautiful place on the planet than California. And, But how do you screw up a place like that? Well, you put in place all these liberal progressive tax policies and regulation policies, and people soon move to places like Laredo, Texas, which ain't as beautiful as California, but boy, it sure is a free state here.
And the quality of life, the overall quality of life is better. The views aren't as nice, but the lifestyle is nice. People are friendlier. It's safer. The schools are better.
That's true.
The costs are lower.
Cost of living is the lowest in the country in Texas. You know where it's the highest in the country?
I'm guessing California.
You got it.
Yeah.
You got it.
Now, by the way, I want to issue a very important clarification. You said West Coast states still gaining population. Washington State, our population leveled off, and the only thing that kept Washington State from being a net population loser was the influx of
from California.
Immigrants, legal and illegal.
That's the only
reason Washington was not a net population loser, Steve. I'll give you the final word.
If you tax something, you get less of it. When you tax your people, when you tax your businesses, when you tax your property, you people leave. And it's just, I pray that California, like when you and I got started in this, John, 25, 30 years ago, Washington was not such a liberal state. And I don't know, my message is do not let the radical leftist progressives destroy the great state of Washington.
We're doing our best. And it was so great that you could meet our good friend Brian Haywood. You could see exactly how we are going to keep that from happening, how we're going to keep Washington from being Californicated. All right. It is coming up here on 12 minutes to 8 o'clock. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Cheryl Atkinson going to be joining us right around the corner. 7 minutes. Yeah. Just couldn't wait to get at it. All right. 7 minutes to 8 o'clock on the John Carlson Show. Cheryl Atkinson joining us in just a few minutes after your 8 o'clock headlines. Before we get there, a quick reminder. On Monday, yours truly will be out at the Washington State Fair in Puyallup, the Puyallup Fair, from noon till 2. That's this coming Monday. And a reminder to all of you folks who've been in the military, all active and reserve and retired military, along with National Guard, Reserve, and their dependents, can go to the fair for free. That's this coming Monday, September 16th. I'll be there from noon to 2. Philip J. Vandervoort III is going to be out there as well. Ari Hoffman is going to be out there as well that afternoon. So we're all there to see you. And I hope you can make it. Again, that is Monday at the fair. And again, for those of you active or retired military, you get in free. So do your dependents, by the way. Your whole family comes in for free. Just show your military ID at the gate. Now, real quickly, if you cannot wait until Monday to see a KVI personality, young Zach is going to be out in Tacoma at McClendon Hardware.
That's right. I'll be out at the McClendon's Hardware between 4 and 5 p.m. in Tacoma off North Pearl Street. John doesn't know this yet, but I think for the first person that shows up, I will have an autographed John Carlson headshot for that lucky, I guess, person.
That's going to be...
Let's do something. I'll come up with something.
That's going to be today, McClendon's Hardware parking lot at 4 o'clock.
Between 4 and 5.
There you go, 4 and 5. All right, we have our number 3 of the John Carlson Show, Cheryl Atkinson, right around the corner on the radio program of record, The John Carlson Show. Thanks for joining us this morning. Our number 3 already of the Commute with Carlson. Man, the time had been flying by. And a quick reminder to all of you, if you want to start this weekend off with a huge discount in the price of gasoline and you live near Sammamish, Washington, which very nice suburb just east of Issaquah, hey, the Shell station on the corner of Northeast Inglewood Hill Road. Again, that's the Shell station at Northeast Inglewood Hill Road in Sammamish. We'll be selling gasoline at the price of the national average, which is about $80 to $1 per gallon less than the Washington State average. So get out there to the Shell station in Sammamish on Northeast Inglewood Hill Road and start your weekend off saving a lot of money. I'm so glad that we could get Cheryl Atkinson to join us here, this portion of the John Carlson Show. First of all, she's got a great new episode of Full Measure, another wonderful segment coming up on Sunday's show. And then I've got to ask her how her brand new book, Follow the Science, is doing. First of all, Cheryl, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing great. Thank you. Happy Friday the 13th.
Yes. Lucky Friday the 13th here. on Sunday's show, you've got a report about trans athletes, which are men who identify as women, competing in women's sports. I wanted to remind our listeners that the high school girls track and field championships in Tacoma this past spring were marred when the winner of, I think it was the 400 meters, was a male who identified as a female and was allowed to run as a female. It was demonstrably unfair to the real girls, the audience was not pleased, and the girls were not pleased. They lost opportunities and honors because of his being in their sport. And keep in mind, in Washington State, all you have to do to qualify as a girl is to say you feel like you're a girl. That's all it takes for a biological male to compete in girls' sports in Washington State at this time. So, Cheryl, your report has particular resonance with us here in Washington.
Well, I remember on the front end of all this madness some years ago, advocates for letting men compete in women's sports said, you know, this will almost never happen. I mean, you know, this is just far-fetched that many men would ever do it. It's hardly ever going to come up. We shouldn't even have to worry about it. It is happening, not infrequently, and the men are winning all kinds of women's sports. The Biden administration passed a rule, I don't know if people know about this, without Congress or anything else, has the power to do certain things, basically forcing colleges that take public funding to let men compete on women's sports teams. But a bunch of states are challenging it. And so far, the courts have put this rule on temporary hold in numerous states that are being challenged, you know, that are challenging it. And it's an epic battle. It's pretty darn important. I mean, we're, you know, you can just look down the road 10 years and see a sports landscape that will be ridiculous. And when people look back and see what happened, which would be mostly men competing in women's sports and all men competing in men's sports and no place for the girls.
Well, and oftentimes these are male athletes who had competed in men's sports, boys sports in high school, men's sports in college, and didn't do that well. They were mediocre. Will Thomas from the University of Pennsylvania men's swim team ranked 462nd in the country as a male collegiate swimmer. When he came out a year and a half later, jumped in the pool wearing a women's swimsuit and said he was a women's swimmer, he set a record and won the 5,000 meters. That tells you just how unfair this is.
Well, let's go down the rabbit hole. As long as there are powerful forces, and I've traced some of those in the past and in my new book, powerful forces trying to normalize this rather than getting at the root cause, or at least doing both, trying to say, why do so many people feel this way? What is going on hormonally? Are there endocrine disruptors, which we know are in our food and water? That's just a fact, that are impacting the way people feel. And is there a way to fix this or avoid it if it's something that is avoidable rather than just pretending that's all good and not getting people help and not looking at root causes?
Yes. Well, no, I think that is overdue. And by the way, one final note on this before we pivot, I really want to salute people like J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter books, who has come out four square against the entire transgender movement and what it portends. And young women like Riley Gaines, who's going to be in Seattle, or going to be in Bellevue, actually, tonight. She's the speaker at the Washington State Republican Party's annual dinner. Riley Gaines, who was competing against that very swimmer I mentioned, male swimmer I mentioned a few minutes ago, and she has been a remarkably courageous young woman, because usually the transgender's reaction when there is pushback and opposition to their agenda is to just shriek. And,
well, and with the censorship movement, they're threatening to arrest J.K. Rowling and people like that for not going along with what's factually incorrect, by not, you know, by not being politically correct. And, you know, I'm reporting on that. I just got back from Europe. In one facet, you know, they're really bad on the censorship, maybe even worse than us right now. But in another facet, when it comes to the transgender surgeries, they never got into that as much, except maybe one or two countries. And they've kind of put a halt on the hormonal treatments for underage kids and the drastic surgeries. We will, too, I predict, in a few years. But how many, you know, at what cost before we get around to it?
Well, at the cost of many completely physically healthy girls being maimed, having completely healthy body parts chopped off, eliminated. I mean, it's just so tragic that this is happening. That politicians like Tim Walz in Minnesota have made their state a sanctuary for teenage girls who run away from home, convinced that they're a male, and want to have, quote, gender-affirming care, meaning hormone blockers, surgeries, which are now illegal, as Cheryl points out, illegal in Great Britain. And other countries, Sweden has turned to discouraging these practices as well. But in America, certain pockets of America anyway, they go right along, don't they?
Well, one more note. The European Union, the Medical Association, put out a paper that said this should not generally be done, that the evidence is scant, the evidence of benefit is scant, and there's evidence of harm. So it's not, you know, just Great Britain. It's pretty much Europe-wide. They're exercising much more caution now on this.
So that's one more reason. A special report on this Sunday's edition of Full Measure on Como 4. Again, every Sunday on Como 4. Airs at 10 and repeats at 11:30. While I've got you here, you've got to tell me how your great new book, Follow the Science, is doing.
Super happy. Thank you for asking. Made the Publishers Weekly bestseller list the first week. Nice. Would have been number 9 on the New York Times bestseller list if they were to list it, but sometimes they just choose not to list a book, but that's how many we sold, which is great.
How do you not
very
list a book?
Numbers. Well, you've heard authors complain about that over the years. They don't tell you methodology or why. We just know numbers-wise we made it, but it's not on there. And they did that with the first two books got on there. The last book and this one, I don't guess they're going to put on there. So they don't have to tell you why. It's their list.
You know what? They should not only have your book on the list, they should be reviewing this book.
Well, actually I was told even a bad review by the New York Times helps sell books, but I'm sure they're not going to get a good review. You know, the last two books, this one and the last one, talk about the New York Times and mistakes they've made and things they've done. So I'm just not sure they're going to embrace it.
Well, I'll tell you, that's, again, why this book is so important, because you're just following facts, you're following evidence, and you're letting the story tell itself.
Well, let me say that the sales, which are stellar, is all you, grassroots, word of mouth, because there is no TV that takes pharmaceutical advertising that is discussing this book. Like, this is zero TV this time, and
wow,
yet we've sold as much. We've done very well. So that's how, I think that's how much it speaks to people, that they're just talking about it and telling each other about it, which is great.
The book they couldn't censor by ignoring. I love it how the book is prevailing anyway. This is just wonderful. Again, the book, Follow the Science. Everything, the corruption of science through politics and big corporate pressure, particularly big pharma. It's a book you do not want to. It's good. By the way, looking ahead, a great gift idea.
I think so, for Christmas. And I see people buying 2, 3, and 4, and I'm sure that's what they have in mind. That'll solve your problem.
Yep, absolutely it will. I'll be doing that. All right. Cheryl Atkinson, it's always great having you on the John Carlson Show. Thanks for making the time here this morning.
All right. Talk to you next week.
Deal. That's Cheryl Atkinson here on The Commute with Carlson. And yes, Riley Gaines, who I think is just a precious national resource. You know, it's not easy standing up to a media-connected mob, which is what the trans movement is all about. Riley Gaines is utterly fearless.
I got to tell you, John, I met her at the RNC. I think you were having another lunch or something. But I asked someone, I said, who's doing her scheduling? Who's her team? And they're like, no, she's just here on her own, just handles all that by herself. Just talking to media, going outlet to outlet.
Well, she's got a team now because we were trying to book her on the show and were unsuccessful in doing it this time around. We hope to have an interview with her because she's the kind of American who really does make a difference. She gets out there to colleges, universities. She'll speak to anyone. Again, she's utterly fearless. Yeah, the trans movement is afraid of her.
She's seen this from a viewpoint that very few have.
That's why they're afraid of her. Yeah. She can speak with firsthand authority, first-hand knowledge, and local knowledge is always the best knowledge. So she's been through all this. She's remarkably articulate. She's incredibly poised. And again, it's so easy not to be. It's so easy to be freaked out, by this cascade of condemnation that comes your way when you speak the truth before a lot of people are ready to hear the truth. And as you heard Cheryl Atkinson say, what J.K. Rowling, and I would argue Riley Gaines, what they're saying is obviously the truth. I mean, sometimes the most dangerous things you can say in society are obvious truths, and this is one of them. And so good for J.K. Rowling, who's no conservative, by the way, not even close, but she doesn't like being pushed around, and she knows she's correct, and she's not going to be, they first tried to get her to change her mind. When she wouldn't change her mind, they tried to silence her, and no, she didn't want to be silenced. So again, good for her, good for Riley Gaines. If you want to see Riley Gaines tonight, go to WSRP.org. That's Washington State Republican Party. She's their dinner speaker tonight. Again, that's WSRP.org for ticket information. Okay, it's a busy day on the John Carlson Show. Busy Friday here on The Commute with Carlson. A lot more coming your way, including updates on the Boeing strike. Yes, they are now on strike as of 8 hours and 19 minutes ago. Philip J. Vandenberg III right around the corner. His favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists on The John Carlson Show. Back we are, The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Philip J. Vandenberg III, your favorite segment of the week. Last one this week of social media from socialists. What do we got?
Oh, I got a variety of stuff here. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. First one I want to start with comes from the LA Times. It kind of is fallout from the Trump-Harris debate earlier this week. Los Angeles Times posting, I guess it's the summation of their story. It says, Kamala Harris attacks Trump for trying to divide Americans after he raises her race as an issue. Well, technically, it was David Muir, the moderator, who asked kind of the leading question about Kamala Harris's biracial background. And I just love that the LA Times is pointing out Harris attacks Trump for trying to divide Americans. You mean it's bad to divide Americans by race, like when, you know, you call someone fascist or racist when you disagree with them politically? Is it that kind of dividing Americans that the Los Angeles Times is talking about? And then a Republican congressman from Texas, Wesley Hunt, 38th District in Texas. He's an Army veteran, West Point graduate, native Texan. Wesley Hunt is his name. He pointed out from the debate, last night, Kamala Harris accused President Trump of attempting to divide us on race. That's rich, coming from the same person who in 2019 at a debate accused Joe Biden of being a racist. But that's Kamala Harris in 2019 and Kamala Harris in 2024.
That's when she tried to make herself look like a civil rights icon by claiming that she was in the second class of students.
Kids that were integrating a school.
Desegregated. Yeah. A segregated school in, I think, Berkeley. And bottom line is she was lying. That school had been integrated before she was born. Yeah. She was just part of busing for diversity, purpose. That's when America lost its head, and you had busing programs that started, including here in Seattle, simply for diversity purposes.
Yeah. Bette Midler is a singer-actress who's a pretty reliable Democrat, Hollywood liberal type, and she's going after the pollster Nate Silver. This is 538 pollster Nate Silver. And Bette Midler apparently saw some things that Nate Silver was posting based on polls about the presidential election. She didn't like the results of the information coming from the polls that Nate Silver was citing. And she posted this about Nate Silver. Who bought Nate Silver and how much did he go for? So she's going after Nate Silver. Nate Silver is responding now. And Nate Silver wrote, "Hey, Bette, understand you may still be frustrated that Silence of the Lambs came out the same year as For the Boys, so you were pretty much always going to lose Best Actress to Jodie Foster. But in poker, we'd call that a bad beat. But that's no reason to tweet out your conspiracy theories."
Good for him. He is a good pollster, by the way.
Forget Taylor Swift. Kamala Harris now has Bette Midler and Linda Ronstadt.
Yeah. And Linda Ronstadt. That's true. That's the triple threat right there.
Would have been in the
singers.
70s. Would have been in the 70s anyway.
Yeah, okay. All right, I got a last one here. This is from the social media handle called Climate Defiance. And you would forgive me if you thought what I was about to read might be considered as possible satire or parody, but I assure you it's not. The Climate Defiance social media handle. The profile says, brand new youth-led group using direct action to resist fossil fuels. And I've talked about this social media handle before. But they posted something from this week where they interrupted a conference that Joe Manchin, West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, was speaking at. And they wrote, breaking, "We took over a speech by Senator Joe Manchin. We humiliated him. We made him leave his seat in shame. This man is a murderer. He incinerates his own grandchildren for profit.
Oh, good.
He belongs in The Hague, not in high society." Now, they posted a little video clip. I'll play you a couple of seconds of how this group, Climate Defiance, behaved at this event that they interrupted that Joe Manchin was at.
"You are a murderer. While you gorge..."
Here we go.
"Joe Manchin, you are a murderer. While you gorge yourself on coal profits, West Virginians are dying."
Okay. So, I mean, just a little bit of hyperbole there. Unhinged claims.
Oh, a little bit of hyperbole there?
Calling someone a murderer. You talk like this, you have zero credibility.
How about an unhinged freaking moron?
But here's the other aspect of this. I don't see any climate advocates like Jay Inslee or Bernie Sanders condemning these actions, these comments, and this behavior. But this is what passes for, you know, intellectual thought amongst the climate defiance group of
fossil fuel protesters. When's the last time you saw Pramila Jayapal criticize people for blocking SeaTac Airport when they're in solidarity with her over Palestine? I don't see her speaking up on that. By the way, as you mentioned, Joe Manchin has a reputation for bipartisanship. He has just endorsed the Republican U.S. Senate candidate running in the state of Maryland, which is important because the Senate is
tied,
up for grabs.
Right? Yeah, 51-49.
And Republicans need to win one more seat to gain control. Larry Hogan, who is a very popular governor in Maryland, would be that 51st vote if he were to win. Joe Manchin is making it a little easier for him to do that. It is coming up 8:30, the John Carlson Show. Speaking of demonstrations that block traffic, a jury has decided that the Washington State Patrol is not liable for the death of a protester killed while illegally protesting on the freeway. More details right around the corner. All right, back we are, the John Carlson Show, 24 minutes to 9 o'clock. If you want to start the weekend saving some money, I can tell you how to do that. The campaign for Initiative 2117, bring down the price of gas by repealing the Climate Commitment Act. They are letting people fill up their gas tanks, not for the price of gasoline here in Washington, but for the national average that's about 80 to 90 cents, maybe even a dollar a gallon less than it goes for here in the state. We have the second highest gas taxes in America, I believe. And the Climate Commitment Act is a lot of the reason why. They are, again, selling gasoline at the national average, not the state average. Just go to the Shell station in the town of Sammamish, which is just east of Issaquah. The Shell station in Sammamish on Northeast Inglewood Hill Road. People have been getting in line to get cheaper gas as of 8 o'clock this morning. So if you're anywhere out there, anywhere close to out there, they're going to be doing it till 10 o'clock. While we're talking about initiatives, the Climate Commitment Act, which was very deceptively passed in the first place, where Jay Inslee had promised it would be pennies, mere pennies. In fact, the price of gas might go down under the Climate Commitment Act. Of course, it went up nearly 50 cents a gallon at one point. Here is Democratic, former Democratic governor, Gary Locke, who I know well. Here is what he said on King 5 Tuesday night after the Ferguson-Reichert debate.
Dave Reichert was also very accurate and pointed out the weakness of that legislation because the governor's office and the leaders of Olympia said that passage of this legislation would lead to maybe just pennies increase in the gas tax. And in fact, people were just surprised that it jumped so high, over 25 cents in some cases, and even higher at some points. And so there's a lack of trust sometimes in our government officials when they say, well, trust us, we're going to pass this. It's really not going to hurt you. It's going to help you. And then the opposite occurs. And so it may affect some of the other initiatives that are on the ballot when they say, well, if you pass this initiative, get rid of this tax or that tax, it's going to really decimate state government. And so I think the voters are a little bit concerned that Olympia is not really being truthful, or they're exaggerating the consequences.
When he says Olympia, you know he's talking about Jay Inslee. Kudos to Gary Locke. Again, being a former Democratic governor, he'll probably take some grief for saying this. I would use the first part of what he's saying. I'd make that an ad if I were the Let's Go Washington people. But speaking of ads, listen to this current deceptive ad asking you to vote no on 2117. Just a snippet of it.
How would Initiative 2117 impact Washington? It would literally ripple across our state.
That's why firefighters are saying no on 2117.
So are small businesses, doctors,
farmers, too.
I love where they have the dramatic music playing in the background. Hurry, you've got to do something. We're all going to die. Look, that is all they have to do is peddle fear. That's all they have to do is peddle fear. Okay? It's not hard. I don't know whether they used actors or the real deal, but it's not hard to find a Democrat who is a firefighter or a farmer or a doctor. There might be many more Republicans, but you can find one if you look. And of course, easy to find a liberal teacher. But that's all they can do is peddle fear. And the farmers thing is especially egregiously dishonest because farmers were promised a cutout. Farmers were promised that this would not apply to fuel that they would use for farming. It wasn't going to touch diesel. It wasn't going to affect their prices. That was a promise. They're so angry, they're filing a lawsuit saying this is not fair that we're being hit. And, of course, that promise was made often. It was made vocally. And then it was kept out of the legislation. And, of course, what becomes law is the words on paper.
What a crazy initiative to bring this level of intensity to. Even if someone opposes it, you know it's not with this... Oh, absolutely never. It's, do you want lower gas prices? I don't know. We'll keep it for the climate. That's the no that they're receiving.
So we hope that people see through it. You know, there's a poll out there right now. Our friend Jeff Pozzola from Next Door Northwest News was sharing this Elway poll that shows that even though more people are for these initiatives than opposed to them in most cases, with the exception of the capital gains tax, they still are under 50% support. And the reason for that is a lot of people still don't know that these initiatives are on the ballot and they don't know what these initiatives are for. Once they know what they're for, it ain't even a close call. But if all you do is read the ballot titles, which are very opaque and they're meant to be, and obtuse because they're meant to be, and at times technical because they are meant to be, rather than just giving you a straightforward explanation of what would happen under the initiative. For instance, the ballot title for Initiative 2117, which qualified for the ballot to bring down gasoline prices, does not mention that the initiative will bring down the price of gasoline or that it will strike down the Climate Commitment Act, which raised the price of gasoline. Doesn't do either one of those things. That's deliberate, too. So, yeah, we're playing in a system that is rigged, but rigged doesn't always win. You can prevail over an unfair system, and I think we are going to. And once again, I got to give kudos to Gary Locke, former Democratic governor, popular two-term governor, went on to serve in the Obama administration. One more time, here's part of what Gary Locke said.
Dave Reichert was also very accurate and pointed out the weakness of that legislation because the governor's office and the leaders of Olympia said that passage of this legislation would lead to maybe just pennies increase in the gas tax. And in fact, people were just surprised that it jumped so high, over 25 cents in some cases and even higher at some points.
So that is a second reason to vote yes on 2117, not just to bring down the price of gas, but to make it clear you don't like when politicians lie to get legislation passed. They tried twice before to pass a version of this. Twice before they tried this and the voters said no. And then when they found that they would have the votes for this, they just rammed it through. In other words, to hell with what the voters told us. And those were different. So again, thanks to Brian Haywood and Let's Go Washington, we now can vote on these measures in November. And it should be vote yes, pay less for all of them. All right. We have a jury deciding that the Washington State Patrol, get this now, the Washington State Patrol is not liable for the death of a protester illegally protesting on I-5. Here's Preston Phillips and Molly Shen from Como 4.
The family of Summer Taylor was hoping to get $24 million from the state, claiming the state didn't do enough to protect protesters who walked on the highway and blocked lanes of traffic.
Como's Jeremy Harris has covered this case extensively and is live at the courthouse for us now. Jeremy, this jury sided with the state patrol.
That's right. The jury found that only one person bears responsibility for what happened on the highway that night, and it is the driver who illegally went up an exit ramp and then went through that crowd of protesters. This has been a tough case for the family of Summer Taylor, and they say while they're disappointed with the verdict, they are grateful about the jury's finding of liability for Summer Taylor and their actions that night.
Was defendant state of Washington negligent? Answer no.
With that, the case against the Washington State Patrol effectively ended, a jury finding troopers were not negligent for the death of Summer Taylor.
Your reaction there to the verdict?
It sucked.
Attorney Karen Kohler represented Taylor's family.
So sad. Karen Kohler lost a big one here. No, it didn't suck. It was common sense. Summer Taylor, they said only one person was responsible. That's the guy who drove up the wrong way up a ramp and hit her with his car. He deserves the overwhelming amount of the blame, but Summer Taylor deserves part of the blame. She was illegally protesting on the freeway. And, you know, it's very ironic. You know, Summer Taylor happens to be Caucasian. She was killed at a Black Lives Matter protest by a black driver who appeared to be targeting her and another protest. I don't know why this guy only got 6.5 years in prison for killing Summer Taylor and terribly hurting her friend, who's in the hospital, I believe, for over 2 months. He drove the wrong way up the ramp, did a 180, and then drove straight at the protesters. It's all on tape, and he's only going to do 6.5 years. To me, this was murder and attempted murder. And the penalty for that should be a lot more than what he received. So in some ways, Summer Taylor did not receive justice, but I don't think her family deserved money from the state of Washington. Kalit, DeWitt Kalit, has been ordered to pay the family $6 million. which is appropriate given the damage that he did. It is 11 minutes to 9 o'clock on the John Carlson Show. You realize that if that lawsuit had prevailed, if Summer Taylor's family got millions of dollars from the state of Washington.
Right. Based on blaming the state or holding the state
blaming the state because she was killed by a car while she was illegally demonstrating on the freeway, blocking the freeway, then picture this. If the authorities crack down on freeway protesters, they might get sued for excessive force or civil rights violation. But if they don't and they pull back and they just let the protesters stay on the freeway and a car hits them, then they can be liable for financial damage and lawsuit awards for contributing toward their injury or death. Wow, talk about not being able to win one. Talk about, you know, heads I win, tails you lose.
Yep.
All right. Gentlemen, if I'm not mistaken, we have an Apple Cup in front of us.
Yeah, tomorrow. Just a little over 24 hours.
Let's see. Who's going to win? We'll start with you, Phil.
I'm nervous. I'll take the Cougs. I have a feeling it's going to be close. I think, like we talked about at the beginning of the show, everyone's going to want to run the ball.
I think it'll be close. I'm going to say dogs by 7.
All right. I'm going to say dogs by 11. And okay. Since we outnumber you, then the Huskies are clearly
motion carries.
Don't even need to watch it.
Motion carries.
2-3 game over.
You now all know the outcome of tomorrow's Apple Cup. Hey, enjoy the Apple Cup tomorrow. Enjoy the weekend ahead of us. Stand by. Great stuff coming from Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins, Lars Larson, and our friend Ari Hoffman in the afternoon.